Kilo. Tell us about asymptotic safety in quantum Einstein gravity.
Thank you very much for the introduction and the invitation to give these lectures here. Well, actually, I'm going to talk about a pretty old subject. These ideas of asymptotic safety date back to the late 70s after an ingenious idea by Steven Weinberg. There was some activity in this field until the early 80s, but then basically all further development stopped, basically because there was no appropriate technical tool to make these rather abstract or formal ideas work. And this lecture series basically is aiming at describing these technical tools, more the tools than the applications, perhaps. Nevertheless, let me start with an introduction and motivation. Just let me remind you of what you certainly all know, namely the theoretical status as for our understanding or our theoretical ideas about the four fundamental interactions we know there are in nature. Well, the electromagnetic weak and strong one, which nowadays are combined into the standard model of particle physics, at the classical level are very nicely described by Yang-Mills type theories. They have a beautiful mathematical geometrical structure behind them. And in the case of these three interactions, we also know how to promote this type of classical theory with matter fields, appropriate matter fields included, how to promote it to a quantum theory. Namely, at least within perturbation theory, we know how to quantize them. Perturbation theory in the following always will mean two things. First of all, in the literal sense, you expand in some small coupling, and then also it means a set of recipes of how to deal with the infinities you encounter in doing loop calculations. And in the case of the standard model, it's basically the what we now call perturbative renormalization theory, which was developed 60 years ago in the case of quantum electrodynamics. Now, as we go on and ask about the corresponding status in gravity, please tell me in case you cannot see the lower part of the transparencies. In the case of gravity, we have general relativity as the classical counterpart of the Yang-Mills type gauge theories in the standard model case, but the promotion, so to speak, of this beautiful, again, geometrically beautiful theory to a quantum theory is something we do not understand at all. The most straightforward thing you could try to do is to quantize gravity along the lines of perturbative quantization as you would do it in the standard model, but then it was soon discovered that the resulting theory is not renormalizable in perturbation theory. The theory based upon this Einstein-Hilbert action is perturbatively non-renormalizable. What this means is when you increase your order in perturbation theory, then you will discover that you need counterterms to be added to your original action, and each of them comes with a new undetermined constant which has to be taken from the experiment. So as you increase your loop order, say, you increase unboundedly, you increase your number of undetermined constants. Even though it's perhaps exaggerated to say that such a theory is not predictable at all at high energy, small distances, it's at least very, very problematic that a theory of that kind can have the desired degree of predictivity you would like to have. So usually the attitude is that this perturbatively quantized general relativity is something like an effective theory rather than a fundamental one, which would be valid at arbitrarily small distances or high energies. Now let's be a little bit more explicit about what you actually do in this perturbation theory approach. here is a list of assumptions which are implicit in this program. First of all, what you have to decide about, as always in field theory, is the field which carries the degrees of freedom you are going to quantize. And in this context, it is taken, as in classical GR, it is taken to be the metric. Then you have to decide about a bare action. It's taken the Einstein-Hilbert action plus a cosmological constant, perhaps, but that's not important here. And the third important aspect is a kind of calculational scheme. You have to decide about how you decide your, how you try to compute the quantities of interest. In particular, you have to say how you are going to deal with the infinities which occur in perturbation theory. And in modern language, you would say perturbation theory, I will comment on this phrase later on. In modern language, you would say you are taking a continuum limit at a trivial or Gaussian fixed point. For the time being, just read this sentence as, in quotes, apply the old-fashioned recipes from the late 40s, plus the more sophisticated ideas as for dealing gauge degrees of freedom, but that's not important here. Now, as we said, this kind of scenario seems not to work, and in this situation now you can ask, what could I change in this box to get a theory, a quantum theory, which has more more desirable properties than the one we manufacture in this way? Well, now in the literature there are, of course, quite a variety of proposals as to what you can change in this list. For instance, string theory would change, first of all, the degrees of freedom. Rather than a point field G mu nu, you would use a string field. Correspondingly, the action has to change, and of course also the calculational method. So not much is kept. In loop quantum gravity, also the degrees of freedom are changed, the calculational methods are not the same, but typically the Einstein-Hilbert action is kept as the basic way of encoding the dynamics. Now the asymptotic safety scenario, which I'm going to discuss in these lectures, one way of looking at it is to say that it is essentially that essentially it keeps it keeps the carrier field, let's call it carrier field of the degrees of freedom. So you keep G mu nu as that field which carries the dynamical degrees of freedom, but the most important thing in that list which you change is perturbation theory. So in a certain sense, this is a very mild modification of this program, because perturbation theory is a mathematical tool. It's not a property of nature and not a property of a real description of nature, of a theory as such. And so the main thing which we are going to change is perturbation theory. So this construction we are going to look into is intrinsically non-perturbative. And as a consequence, somehow, in a certain sense, you will understand this better in a moment, as a consequence of that, also the action is changed. But not, most probably it is changed, but not in an uncontrolled or ad hoc way, but rather in a very predictable way. Namely, before going into the details, let me list here the main, now formulated in a positive way, the main aspects of the asymptotic safety approach. The degrees of freedom are encoded, as in classical GR, in the space-time metric. The quantization is performed in an intrinsically non-perturbative way, so we are not trying to expand in a small Newton constant or anything like that, so that we can, in a sense, escape the bad properties which are found in the naive approach. And as for the action, the bare action of this approach, for a reason which will be more plausible later on. We call it gamma tilde. This action is not quite the Einstein-Hilbert action. It contains some more terms, but these terms which are added here, the overall structure of this gamma star is not chosen by hand, but it's a prediction. And this is somehow unusual in quantum field theory. For a particle physicist, there is this notion of model building. You write down some action and you quantize it. And that's not what we are doing here. We are not quantizing a given action, but rather we determine a bare action in such a way that the good, I will describe to you what it means, the good renormalizability properties appear, which we think our theory should have. More precisely, this gamma star is a fixed point of a certain renormalization group flow. What this flow is, how you can compute it, this will be the main topic of these lectures. And in principle, if you are arbitrarily smart or have arbitrarily huge computers, then and sufficiently many good ideas, then in principle you in principle you are able to determine exactly this bare action, and then the claim is a non-perturbative quantization of that bare action leads to a theory which is well behaved, free from singularities at arbitrarily small distances or high energies. This funny word asymptotic safety comes from just this property at high energies. You are safe from unphysical degrees of freedom. Now all this sounds great and very beautiful, and this is essentially Weinberg's ideal, but the crucial ingredient clearly is this ultraviolet fixed point, which sort of controls or tames the divergences you find in perturbation theory. And so the obvious question is there such a fixed point? And all progress in that direction clearly depends on whether or not exists. And in fact, in this old paper of 79 I mentioned by Weinberg, he first speculated that along this kind of scenario, quantum Einstein gravity can be defined non-perturbatively. But that was basically just an idea, and at that time there was no real calculational tool to verify it. What he could do was to look at dimensionalities of space-time close to two, and then use an epsilon expansion to look for fixed points, essentially by standard field theory methods. And he did indeed find that there is a fixed point of an appropriate flow which would allow to make 2 plus epsilon dimensional gravity based upon the Einstein-Hilbert action well defined, renormalize it, and predictive. But then for the four-dimensional case, as I said, there were no tools, and the tool I'm trying to explain to you in these lectures now, which can handle these kind of problems, is the so-called effective average action introduced by Christoph Wetterich in the early 90s. And this is a sort of scale-dependent effective action which has not been invented for gravity or anything specific. This is a very, very general approach which can help in basically in solving path integrals. And it has been applied to statistical mechanics, particle physics, even in turbulence and hydrodynamics, you can apply this technology. So it is a very general tool to handle non-perturbative problems where there is no obvious expansion parameter. And what I'm going to describe in the next lecture tomorrow will be the application of this idea to gravity. So this little k will be a kind of scale, an infrared cutoff, and what just to explain in one sentence, actually this will be a whole lecture then, in one sentence, what is this renormalization group flow I was talking about, that is the dependence of this functional, this effective action, the dependence on this cutoff. So now I've used very many undefined words. That was the rough overview of what we are going to talk about. The plan of these lectures is essentially this one. In the rest of this lecture today, I'm going to explain in some details this idea of the effective average action as the basic tool which we are going to use for this non-perturbative investigation of gravity. And in this first part, I will not talk about gravity at all, just for notational and conceptual simplicity to be as elementary as possible, we shall just look at the scale of theory. Then tomorrow we shall apply the same ideas to gravity, where some additional complications arise. Then in the third part, I will really demonstrate that within approximation, these things really are going to happen. I mentioned on the second transparency, namely, you can, within approximations, you can compute such a renormalization group flow, you can find a fixed point, and if the approximations are typical of the exact theory, then it seems you can construct a four-dimensional quantum theory in this way. So here I will show you the evidences collected so far for the program to work in four dimensions. And then there comes, depending on how much time is left, a section with various applications. One point I would like to discuss are certain fractal properties of the space times as they appear in this framework. This issue is interesting for at least two reasons. One reason is here you can see in a quite explicit and nice way how this average action philosophy can be applied in practice. And the other reason is that in this context, perhaps, this is absolutely not clear yet, perhaps the first point of contact has been found between this approach and the Lorentzian dynamical triangulation approach, namely this funny observation that space-time is perhaps two-dimensional at small distances. Now, let me start with the effective average action for scalars in the simplest case. Well, as I said, this is just again a list of topics I will define then really explicitly on the next pages. It is a Wilson type, this functional, a Wilson type, or a coarse-grained free energy functional. So in a certain sense, if you have heard in your statistical mechanics lecture something about block spin transformations and coarse graining of Hamiltonians for spin systems, then you could use that intuition to have some idea of what this gamma k is. If you are not familiar with these concepts, it doesn't matter. You don't have to know anything. And you don't have to know anything about perturbative renormalizability and these issues here, so we shall define everything from scratch. Okay, so it has a certain coarse graining built into it. Intuitively, this means that it's a kind of generating functional for Green's functions whose fields are averaged over a certain volume of space-time. And how is that done? It's done by introducing an infrared cutoff into your basic functional integral that we shall do on the next page. The idea is, if this is the axis, the momentum axis of the modes you integrate out in your path integral, the idea is to define gamma k by just integrating out the modes with momenta larger than this infrared cutoff, those here, And the other ones, the long wavelength or low momentum modes, are not integrated over. And this is done by giving to these modes a kind of momentum-dependent mass or a cutoff factor. You will see it on the next page, how it is done explicitly. And if one does this construction, then that's a particular nice point. Then you can take two limits of this gamma k. You can send k to infinity. What you then get is the classical, or more appropriately, the bare action S. And when you send k to zero, you get the standard effective action. There are many continuum implementations of the Wilsonian renormalization group which have similar properties, but one of the special properties of the effective average action is this one, this close connection to the standard effective action, for which you have a well-developed intuition and which often helps in making approximations. Then we shall derive what is called an exact renormalization group equation. That is an equation which gives you the scale dependence, the dependence on this scale k of this functional. So this is, we shall also explain and define what this right-hand side means and how you come to this equation. I should mention already, because some people are seriously disturbed by the use of the word exact in this context. Exact does not refer to any high rigor of or any mathematical physics rigor. What exact means is that what you evolve here is an entire action functional and not just a few relevant parameters. That is what you would do in perturbation theory. The renormalization group you read in particle physics textbooks about is just an equation for the scale dependence of a few relevant couplings. But what is evolved here is a functional. And in fact, if you are able to solve this equation subject to the boundary condition gamma infinity equals s, and you solve it down to k equals zero, then you have determined gamma, so you have solved the complete theory. So this is the meaning of exact as opposed to the other renormalization group equations. That's not the arrogance of the people working in this field to put the exact here. That is in Weinberg, in Wilson's old articles from the 70s. Okay, so even though this is an exact equation, it's as difficult to solve it exactly as it is to solve a functional integral. So what you do, what you can do, is you can truncate, we shall discuss what this means, you can truncate the space in which these functionals live and solve a sort of projected flow, the flow projected onto some tractable subspace. And this approximation scheme is the one we are going to use later on. It is sort of, it comes in a natural way with this kind of solving dynamical problems in field theory or statistical mechanics. Okay, now let's become very explicit. As I told you, we shall just look at the scalar theory to start with. Let's call this one component real scalar chi, and let's assume we are given a bare action of this kind. This is a standard kinetic term. We work on d-dimensional Euclidean space. I'm always using lower indices, then the interaction term is not important here. Chi tilde of P will be the Fourier transform of this field, so the first two terms here, the inverse propagator, gives rise to this P squared plus M squared. And now if you look into a standard undergraduate textbook on field theory, what you would do to quantize it with path integrals, you would write down basically the first line of this formula here. The generating functional for connected Green's functions you get by integrating over all fields chi, or all chi tilde modes if you wish, And then in the Euclidean case, exponential minus action plus a source j times chi. That's the standard case. And the modified case, the one with an infrared cutoff, which we are now defining here, the functional WK, has a suppression factor for the low frequency or low momentum modes in it. It's bilinear in chi, and in between these two chi's, there is a function r of minus box, Euclidean box. So this additional term here in Fourier language is you have an integration over all momenta, rk of p squared, and then the Fourier transformed squared. Now, as I told you, you would like to suppress in this path integral the low frequency modes. You would like to integrate out those chi tilde only, which have p squareds above k squared, but not below. So what you can do, for instance, is to give the following shape to this function rk. It is zero for all p above k squared, so you integrate away your modes as always, no suppression, and you make it diverge to infinity at k squared. Then there is an infinity, or an e to the minus infinity, naively speaking, for those modes which have a momentum below k squared, those down here. And that would be a sharp infrared cutoff. All infrared modes are strictly suppressed. Now you can choose RK in this way. You can do calculations with it, but actually it is mathematically much more convenient not to use such a sharp cutoff, but a smooth version of it. Something which goes to zero at large momenta and then to a constant k squared for small momenta. And I will convince you that this smooth suppression is enough for our purposes. A function with these properties could be this exponential, for instance, but there is an infinite variety of possibilities. They all differ in the way how you interpolate between zero and k squared. Now what this means is, as I promised, it means that you are giving a momentum-dependent mass to your... Can you read this line? You give a momentum-dependent mass to your modes. If you combine the m squared term, m squared plus p squared plus the cutoff, all the quadratic pieces, you find an inverse propagator p squared plus m squared plus this modification. If you now, just for fun, try to work out this WK in perturbation theory, then for that purpose you would use this propagator, and you see if k is much larger than the mass, then you can omit the mass, and you have some 1 over p squared plus rk, and this rk is k squared for the small momentum modes. So what this modified propagator does, it gives an infrared cutoff at that scale p near k. On the other hand, if the mass is much larger than k, then you can omit this suppression term here, and in this case, it is the physical mass which serves as an infrared cutoff. Yes?
So if you go to Valencia, then could you have problems because this is not training more? I mean, you have to have m squared and p squared.
Yes, for the time being, it's all Euclidean, but I will make a comment on that tomorrow. It is more tricky, but you can do it also in the Lorentzian case. But for the time being, let's stick to this statistical mechanics-like interpretation. Now let's do what you always do, define the average field phi as the expectation value, normalized expectation value of the microscopic, I will always call it microscopic field chi, the variable of integration chi, and produce the sort of macroscopic expectation value phi. you get it by differentiating WK with respect to the source. Then you get phi as a functional of J. Let's, as always, assume you can solve this relationship so as to get J as a functional of phi. And now, as always, let's do the Legendre transformation from the W to a new functional gamma tilde. Now, this is not yet the effective average action I am aiming at. Just let's define it as an intermediate object. Then, as always, you immediately verify that the functional derivative of the Legendre transform just gives the variable on which the original functional depends. This is a trivial observation. So at k equals 0, that would be the standard effective action. Now to go on, we need two objects, namely the two-point functions of both W and gamma tilde. Well, if you take two functional derivatives of W, then this gives the ordinary propagator g, g of x and y, or sometimes I write it in a matrix style notation, g, x, y. And two derivatives of gamma tilde gives the inverse propagator. I denoted gamma tilde 2. This 2 always denotes the Hessian of a functional. And then by standard properties of Legendre transforms, you can easily show that g and gamma tilde 2 in a matrix notation are mutually inverse matrices. And the other thing you also know or easily derive, if you take two derivatives of the generating functional of connected Green's functions, you get the two-point function minus the full two-point function minus the connected piece. Yes? It's still there, but sometimes I don't write it. That is has historical reasons. I haven't written it for 15 years, so we decided not to write it. But you're absolutely right. Everything depends on K, even if it's not indicated explicitly. Also, these angular brackets you should think of depending on K because it's the average done in presence of the cutoff. And it also, of course, depends. We are not setting to zero the sources. All these objects depend on J or alternatively phi. But modulo the subscript K, which I anyhow don't write, this is the same as in the standard discussion. Now, let's define. At first, that might be a little bit unmotivated definition. Let us define what is really the so-called effective average action. What is the functional with the good properties we are going to use later on? That's not quite the Legendre transform, but it is the Legendre transform minus the suppression term, but the suppression term not with the microscopic, but the macroscopic field. So minus integral phi, then r of minus box acting on phi. And for later applications, I've here rewritten this term. You can, as in quantum mechanics, you can insert a redundant integration, phi of x, phi of y, and then here you get the matrix element of the matrix r with indices x and y, which is obtained by acting with the differential operator on a delta function. Or in matrix notation with summation convention, it's simply this object which appears here. Then later on it will be important occasionally that the field equations you get from this object are not quite the usual ones. The effective field equation is delta gamma by delta phi is the source, but minus rk acting on phi. Okay, but in any case, this is the definition of the effective average action. And now let me try to convince you that this is an interesting and nice object with remarkable properties, and in particular that it makes sense to subtract off this term here. Now the first thing we can do is to derive this exact renormalization group equation, a closed equation for the scale dependence of this object. Well, in this context, it's usual to introduce the so-called renormalization group time little t, the log of k over some reference scale k naught, then k ddk is the derivative with respect to t. Sometimes I write it like that or partial. Now, that's the gamma tilde. Let's take the scale derivative of this object. So it comes at three places. First of all, when you solve for the source as a function of the classical field, you encounter a k-dependence here and there in the argument, and then w has its explicit k-dependence. So when you differentiate here, this first term is the derivative at that source term, then you have an explicit differentiation of w, and you have to differentiate here. This you do via chain rule by delta w delta j, and then you take the scale derivative of this functional which solves this. Oh, I'm sorry. And at this point I can exploit that delta W delta J is just the mean field, so this term and this term cancels, and what is left over is just the explicit differentiation of W with this resolving functional, the solution inserted. Now this explicit differentiation is straightforward to do because the only place in the path integral where k appears is in this cutoff term, and the cutoff term is bilinear in the microscopic fields, so it should be possible to express it in terms of the propagator. So what you get is, for this explicit differentiation of W, you get an expectation value, and differentiating the cutoff factor brings down this term bilinear in chi. You can pull out this matrix, which doesn't contain chi, and you end up with a two-point function. Now, this two-point function you can write as the connected propagator plus explicitly pulled out the disconnected pieces, as we said before. So written in a slightly different way, this is the term with the two phis, and the propagator gives this term by returning to a more standard notation. You can rewrite this as phi, and then this cutoff acting, this box acting on that x. And what you have here, you can reinterpret as a trace x integrated over x, y, x. This is a matrix multiplication, and the x integration produces this trace. So at this point you see that it was perhaps not totally crazy to subtract this cutoff term from the Legendre transform, namely when you now go from gamma tilde to gamma, you see that this first term, which we found here, precisely cancels by the definition of gamma. So the scale derivative of gamma is simpler even. You just have this trace dtr and then the propagator. Now we use that the propagator is the inverse of the Hessian of gamma tilde. Gamma tilde 2 was the second functional derivative of gamma, the inverse of g, and if you take the Hessian of gamma tilde, that is the Hessian of gamma plus rk. Just by differentiating this explicitly subtracted cutoff term, you get this additional term. And that's it. What we have here now is a closed form for the scale derivative of k. On the left-hand side, dt acting on this k here. On the right-hand side, trace. Here is the second functional derivative, and this rk factors or operators are explicitly known. So this object here is the prototype of the effective average actions flow equation for the simple case of the purely scalar theory. This is the exact renormalization group equation, exact in the sense I mentioned, of the average action. And the point you should always keep in mind, in particular when one applies this strategy to theories which are not renormalizable in perturbation theory, this trace on the right-hand side here is always well defined, both in the infrared and in the ultraviolet. The reason is that RK has this step function behavior. It might go to infinity or have a step only, that's not important. But the scale derivative of RK is non-zero only in this transition region where you jump from zero to one. So the impact this factor has under the trace is that what contributes to this derivative near k is only a very thin shell of momenta, thin shell of momenta centered about this momentum k. So the convergence of this right-hand side is absolutely excellent. You can make it as good as you like. And also, as long as k is non-zero, there are no infrared divergences. So all the problems of taking ultraviolet and infrared limits, they are in the problem, they are in this problem of sending k to zero and to infinity. Now, another surprising property of this equation is that it is completely independent of the bare action we started from. So what does it mean to quantize or to solve a system specified by a bare action? So the equation doesn't know it. But the point is, the initial condition you have to use knows it. For that purpose, let us look at the boundary values of this functional for k going to zero and to infinity. Well, the first one is trivial. When you send k to zero, then all your rk, for all modes rk, vanishes, and you are simply back to the standard situation. The suppression factors are all gone, and so you end up with a standard effective action. And what I'm going to show here, or to argue at least, is that in the other limit, when k is sent to infinity, your functional gamma k approaches the bare action. So the bare action is the initial condition with respect to which you have to solve the flow equation. And this is depicted here in this picture. This green thing is what we shall call theory space, the space of all action functionals. One point is S, another point is gamma, and the curve is the gamma k's at intermediate values of k. The arrows are always downward. This is the direction of coarse graining in the Wilsonian sensor. The arrows are always from ultraviolet to infrared. Now let me argue that this is indeed true, that the infinite cutoff limit is the bare action. Well, it's sort of plausible in the sense that when you have an infrared, after all, an infrared cutoff, which is infinitely high, there are basically no modes to be integrated out. So there is no quantum corrections to the bare action. And mathematically, how this comes about, you can study most easily by means of an alternative characterization of gamma k. There is the flow equation which defines it, and there is also an integral differential equation which you can use to define it. And the derivation is almost the textbook one you do for classical, for the standard case. You take the definition of W, you take the definition of gamma tilde in terms of W, the definition of gamma in terms of gamma tilde, and you plug one into the other, and after two or three lines, you get this functional integral equation for gamma. So here is gamma k at phi. Here is integrated over chi. Chi is integrated over here, the derivative of gamma at phi, chi minus phi. And here is a suppression factor, which involves the difference of chi minus phi and the cutoff operator acting on chi minus phi. So this is just equivalent to the previous definition of the functional via an explicit Legendre transformation. And now you can see what happens when you send k to infinity. When k is large, basically all momenta are belong to the class of low momentum modes. So all rk's go like k squared. Here you have effectively a factor k squared. You have an exponential minus k squared times chi minus phi. So very roughly speaking, what this amounts to is a delta functional, delta chi minus phi. So chi is more or less forced to be equal to phi. All other values are suppressed. And this means if this is chi equals phi, then this term disappears. This is anyhow gone, and you have gamma of phi equals S of phi. Now you can...
Sorry, I have a question. In the Lorentzian you are saying it stresses instead of A. In the case of, in the Lorentzian case, when you have an I in front of the action,
yes, then
an
you,
I in front of the action, or not?
Yeah, there is always, we would put an I here, and then you have to appeal to something like the Riemann-Lebesgue lemma.
Okay.
So it oscillates infinitely rapidly in that limit. And you would see, actually, what I would offer you, if you don't like this very brute force argument, you can do it more formally. You can do a settle point evaluation in the limit k going to infinity. It becomes exact. And then you also can conclude that gamma is essentially equals to S. It's not completely true. I'm sorry. It is not completely true. That's why I put this equality sign in quotation marks. When you do the settle point approximation, you also get a one loop determinant in the heavy mass limit, but this determinant is explicitly known. You can compute it, and usually it plays no role, so I will not write it down here. So the more rigorous treatment is by a settle point approximation, and in to answer your question, then it would be a stationary phase kind of argument, which has the same consequence. Now, what I was talking about so far is a functional flow equation. So you have a space of functionals, and on that space you have an evolution. You evolve an entire functional. Now it is sort of, should I? Yeah, actually this is a pretty good point to stop, so let's come to that tomorrow. Okay, thank you.